find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to the Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest most certainly goes without exception. She is a high performing franchise consultant. In fact, one of the top in the world. She is the founder of Prosperity Thinkers, Kim Butler. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Nick. Always a joy to talk about progress and positive momentum in the business world and all good things that relate to us human beings getting the best results in life that we can.
Oh, no kidding. Talk about leveling up. So you get to spend your time helping folks do that in the franchise model and helping them acquire their American dream. How exciting is that? Most folks, you know, they drive around, they talk to friends, and they don't always understand that franchising can be a lot of things. I had a mentor, he told me, he'd say it a lot, actually, as long as it's ethical, moral, and makes money, it can be franchised. And most folks think that it's just McDonald's or Burger King. But in fact, it's companies like Lime Painting that do home services, or, you know, a dentist, or home spas, and you name it. Franchising has a place for it. The point I'm making, most people don't raise their hand and say, oh, I'm going to get into franchising. It has a way of finding you. Kim, how did franchising find you?
Well, it really started long ago, because Robert Kiyosaki talked about franchising as a way to print money legally. And like your mentor, as it relates to the value of providing a service or a product, whatever the particular franchise is, and ideally it's one that's really in alignment with your God-given talent and the work that you're doing out in the marketplace. It's just a space that I've always been curious about. I've always loved business, even though I'm an English major from college. And I have an interesting perspective on the franchising world, because I work primarily in the financial services aspect of helping people get up and running with their own practices of being a financial coach or a strategist. You know, various terms get used in the space of providing that service. And it's so wonderful today, because we're not limited geographically like people used to be in the past for providing this type of environment. And so being able to help people with their finances, not only from a client standpoint, you know, that may have a W-2 job, or maybe they own a franchise themselves, or, you know, they're a real estate investor or whatever, but also being able to help other people create their own business in that franchise mental space, if not always the legal space, so that they can build upon the shoulders of giants, really, and you know, take the good lessons that have already been fought and won and learned and sometimes failed at and go forward, which is really the whole beauty of franchising to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk a lot about, you know, me as the founder at Lime, having taken the arrows in the back and failed forward and really proved out the Lime way. And our franchise partners, you know, we've opened in coming up on 25 states, every region, and our owners have just further validated our model. And that's the beauty of franchising, right? Uniting behind the customer and consistently delivering value in the marketplace as it's constantly evolving. So Yeah, Kim, you've flipped the script on traditional investing. What's the one common financial rule you believe is flat wrong and why?
It's that taking on more risk will get you more reward. So most investment people that you talk about, that's what they're about. They're investing. And that's an interesting verb, right? You invest, like to put money in. And then it's supposed to be a noun. It's supposed to turn into something. It's supposed to actually have value. And I've seen over my 30 years of helping people in the personal finance space, so much money lost because we think that taking on more risk is going to get us more reward. We also, especially as Americans, I don't find this, we have another part of our business that works a lot in Canada. I don't find this true of Canadians, but in America, we absolutely flat out want something for nothing. We want an awesome investment account, but we don't want to put much money in, right? So it's so important, even though it's boring, to flip that script and really look at savings as the verb, the act of putting money away in a savings account, a noun, or another place to store cash and liquidity, because it's from that cash position, that liquid position, that we can take advantage of things like buying investment real estate, buying into franchises, pursuing opportunities. You know, everybody talks about an emergency fund. Okay, great. Have one, right? Like get that funded and then cross that off your list. But what about an opportunity fund? How high is up as it relates to the savings and liquidity that you want for opportunities?
So there has to be some financial literacy involved there and intentionality and discipline. You know, you mentioned just the culture of Americans, frankly, and that's not common. Would you agree?
Agreed. Yes, it is really so much of a mental space. And actually, the last book that I wrote, I have 11 books on Amazon, and my most recent is called Busting the Scarcity Mindset. Because you cannot go into any environment with a scarcity mindset and get good results. Now, believe me, I mean, I fall into scarcity mindset probably daily, sometimes hourly, right? So it's not that I don't fall into the scarcity thinking, it's what do I do about it? And decisions made when we're coming at something from a position of fear are usually not good decisions. So we've got to do whatever it takes, you know, go outside and do jumping jacks or something to shift our really our physiological selves so that we can adopt that prosperous mindset and make good decisions.
Level up financially, most certainly. You focus on helping families reach accredited investor status. What's the biggest misconception holding them back that most advisors won't touch?
Well, to begin with, most people, you know, not on the financial services side, but on the client side, they don't even know what an accredited investor is. And so the current definition is $300,000 of income and or $1 million of net worth, or you have to have a Series 65, which is a license that's normally for the financial services types of things. There are so many investments out there that require people to be accredited. So some people can do that fairly young in life because they have very high paying jobs. You know, they're in an all commission environment or they're in tech or whatever, and they're making $300,000-$500,000. And so, okay, great, noted, they're accredited. Most people, though, don't have that. And instead, they have to get accredited by building that first $1 million net worth. And for most people, that takes some time. And our society is so focused on retirement that most people are putting so much money into their retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, that kind of thing, which are not opportunity funds. Those dollars are locked up till 59 and a half. And I'm not saying don't do them at all because you want to take advantage of the match. But so many people are maxing, M-A-X, out their retirement plans. And so they may have $1 million net worth, but it's all tied up in that box and they can't use it to pursue opportunities. So Those are the two things I would suggest, is make sure that as you're building toward accreditation, that you save and you have liquidity, and make sure that those dollars are available to pursue opportunities, that they're not tied up in a box of governmental rules based on how old you are and that type of thing.
Right. And this doesn't sound like something that's going to happen overnight.
Nope. And again, back to our, we want something for nothing, and I get that. Yet it is amazing. We have some very specific structures that we provide that help people save more, and they are not budgeting. I absolutely flat out know that budgeting doesn't work, but what instead works is the idea of saving first, paying yourself first. And you know, a lot of us have heard this, but we have an app plus an account structure that's by invitation only. So these are private clients that we help, and thankfully there's heavy AI, you know, mixed in. So we're able to help a lot of people on this structure that really drive that savings behavior. And we can get people to that $1 million fairly quickly, typically more quickly than they thought, so they can go pursue their accredited investments.
It's incredible how technology drives innovation, and AI is really taking over in so many positive ways. I love how you're leveling up the way that you help the folks that you advise through technology. That's exciting. Your philosophy emphasizes using life insurance as a wealth building tool. In your view, what's the most underrated use of it that franchise owners should understand?
It's that opportunity fund. So we talked earlier about the importance of saving to build an opportunity fund. And again, this is after your emergency fund is funded. When you have an opportunity fund and it starts to get bigger, then you start asking, well, where should I store it? So rather than storing your opportunity fund at a bank or a brokerage house, money market, credit union, that kind of thing, if you'll store that opportunity fund in a whole life insurance policy, WHOLE, from a mutual company, so like Guardian, Mass Mutual, New York Life, Penn Mutual, those types of companies, that space enables you to borrow against that cash value. So this is your opportunity fund, right? And utilize it to purchase your franchise or your investment real estate or whatever it is that you're working on. And it also enables you to borrow against it to fund, say, a marketing program for your franchise or your whatever it is that you're working on. And so this space where you can borrow against, let's just give a quick numerical example. Let's say you have $100,000 of cash value and the franchise fee is $60,000. Rather than removing $60,000 to pay the franchise fee and get going, you can, and that's a small franchise, I realize, but just using a simple, easy example, you can borrow against the $100,000. So your account doesn't drop to 40. Your account stays at 100,000. You have 60,000 to go do your franchise down payment or your real estate investment down payment or whatever it is that you're working on. And then you can pay that loan back and do it again and again and again. And so our business owners, our real estate investment clients, you want to talk about leveling up. I mean, you know, they thought they could buy one franchise or one real estate deal. Now they can buy 10 because they're borrowing against it, using the income, paying it back, borrowing against it again. All along the while, that 100,000 is 200,000 and then five and then a million. And then it just keeps growing because what do we want? The ability to take advantage of bigger opportunities, right? That's what leveling up is about, is pursuing that thing that's working and enabling us to do even more.
So how did you get introduced to this strategy?
My husband, Todd Langford, who I was not married to at the time, is the owner of Truth Concepts. And in a way, that company also provides, it's a little different perspective on the franchise space, but it provides the ability for people to utilize his software. I purchased that software and it enables me to prove all kinds of things in the personal financial realm. One of them is the effectiveness of whole life insurance. I didn't even know what the product did. I was in my early 20s. I didn't have children. I was barely married myself at that time to somebody else. And I didn't really care about life insurance, but I did care about becoming an accredited investor, building an opportunity fund, all these things. So Todd introduced me to the Truth Concepts suite of calculators, the ability to prove the effectiveness of this centuries old product called Whole Life. And then with that confidence, I was able to go out and help other people do the same. And I've been doing that now for over 30 years.
How smart. It's just so unique and niched, and clearly an advantage for somebody wanting to level up as an entrepreneur. It doesn't come free, right? You have to invest in a business to earn that right to be an entrepreneur. I'm sure you talk to plenty of folks that have misconceptions about whole life insurance. What are some easy or just common misconceptions that you can speak to?
Oh, it's a great question. It really is the redheaded stepchild of the financial services industry, which is funny to me because these companies, the MassMutual, Guardians, New York Lives, I mean, they've been around 150, 60, 70, 80 years. And the product is even older than that in Europe. So it's a space that shouldn't have some of the things that people say around it. For example, is it a Ponzi scheme? Well, let me think. I don't think a Ponzi scheme could survive 150 plus years. So probably not. You know, we have financial personalities. I won't name names, but probably everybody knows who I'm talking about, that literally say they hate Whole Life, or, you know, they would never use it, or it's a horrible investment. Well, it's not an investment at all, first of all. And second of all, why would you hate a financial product? Like, that makes no sense. So I think really the biggest thing that I encourage people to do is make sure you're open-minded, because if you're not, then that's the end of the discussion. But if you're open-minded, then figure out how you learn best. Do you like to read? Do you like to watch? Do you like to listen? Do you like to get your hands involved? And at our website at prosperitythinkers.com, we have people that can come there and get learning material based on their learning modality. So whether it's a book, a podcast, a blog post to read, a video to watch, I even have a little family legacy game. You know, you like the color green. Here you go, right? Talk about branding. Our family legacy game, it's just a simple little card game, but it lets people get in there and get the ideas around the efficiency of Whole Life, the seven principles of prosperity, our perpetual wealth work, which people tend to love that book of ours more than any of the others, and just learn and learn in a way that's not a sales call. It's not even talking to anybody. It's just consuming and learning, consuming the information, learning from the information, and then choosing for themselves if this is something that they would want to take a next step about.
Who have been some of your, some folks that have been inspiring for you in the space?
Absolutely. Well, I've got a variety of them. So Robert Kiyosaki, I mentioned earlier, his CPA, Tom Wilwright, I've known for close to 30 years. His original CPA, I knew as well. Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach. I've been involved in Strategic Coach for over 30 years as an attendee and also earlier as an associate coach. So that organization's very, very important to me. The Kolbe Company, K-O-L-B-E. The Kolbe Profile is one of the best business tools out there to get some knowledge around the God-given talent that I have and kind of put some English words around it. I also happen to think it's the best marriage tool out there, even though that's not what it's designed for.
Yeah, your spouse is your superpower, right? Being aligned there and so important to being a high performer and just being in the business space in general. I've always said that my spouse is my superpower. So I can see how that overlap works there. I had a feeling you would say, Mr. Kiyosaki, so much of your approach is unique, clearly, but how awesome is it to have an advisor like you when you're looking to make an investment and understand financial products and start getting serious about how do I make this work, right? I'm sure most folks you speak to are at a crossroad or have had, you know, something gnawing at them for a while, and they know that they want to pursue investing in entrepreneurship, and they just don't know how. And it's not as simple as you may think up front. And so having an advisor, a consultant that can give you not only practical and simple tools to use and the framework and the vision and the roadmap, but also those more sophisticated strategies that you can get serious about. So yeah, thank you for sharing. You speak often about wealth without Wall Street. For a high performance owner expanding multiple units, what's the first move they make to break free from market dependency?
Well, I think the investment in that business, franchise, real estate, you know, whatever it, they may have their own business to begin with and then build upon that with franchise capabilities, is the best investment. And truly, when you look at that, what that is an investment in themselves. And when I look at all of the investing that I've done, myself is my best investment. Marketing programs for my business, my husband's business, that kind of thing. Becoming a better human, thereby enabling me to continue to create value in the world. So, you know, earlier we mentioned the retirement space, which so many people get so caught up in trying to build their retirement plans, and then they find themselves really restricted and they can't do other things. And Wall Street has created that. Wall Street really supports those retirement plans, and it wants those dollars for themselves to continue to do their work. But frankly, they don't serve the person that put the money there, which is crazy. And so we work hard to help people get assets back into their control. We don't want Wall Street controlling the assets. We don't want the government. We don't want their employer controlling the assets. And so many times that's where all the control is, where the control should really be back on their side of the table. So there's some very specific things, and sometimes just becoming aware that they're losing control with every dollar that they're putting into deals is the first part. And so they can, the first job really is to shift those new dollars that are easy to move, right? Like you just stop contributing to the Wall Street account or the 401k or 403b or whatever. And then the existing dollars are harder, and it takes some wealth shift work to enable that to happen. But one of the things that's super important about owning a business is to make sure, if you view your business as your biggest asset, which it's probably going to be, especially over time, to make sure that you have the protection path really supported along the way. So I like to say people are on two parallel paths. They're going to absolutely build their wealth accumulation thing. It may have been Wall Street at the beginning. It may have been retirement plan at the beginning, but over time, it's that business, it's that real estate, it's that space that they have more control of. But along that way, in parallel with that effort, to build the protection path. Now, protection, you know, some of it's very obvious, like having insurance and that type of thing on their buildings, on their lives, on what happens if they become disabled, on their cars and their trucks, of course, you know, all their homes, all of the logical things that we would insure. But in addition to that, to be thinking long-term as to where those parallel paths are going to go, because long-term you can combine, for example, the sale of a business or the sale of real estate with the life insurance that you've been using all along the way just to insure your life in a space called a charitable remainder trust, which would enable you to sell that franchise or real estate without capital gains tax. So you're building these two parallel paths, but you're conscious that at the end, they're going to come together. And if you can combine them with a guaranteed event called death, and a guaranteed payout, the life insurance, with the sale of a business or a piece of real estate, that's probably appreciated quite a bit by this stage. You can get some very, very effective taxes reduced, very legally, of course, very morally, because it's a charitable remainder trust, like you're helping a charity. And you can also drive higher income with less risk at a time in your lives, because you're probably going to do this in your 80s or your 90s, that you might not want to take on the business risk that you had been. And so it's a fun space to really set people up for that in their 30s and 40s, so that when they're in their 70s and 80s, they can take advantage of it.
Right. And most folks don't even know where to get started. Yeah. When it comes to thinking big that way and planning. Where do I go? Where do I start? Who do I trust?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And the beauty of all of what we've talked about today is it can be started very small. I say to people all the time, go slow and start small. You know, start with monthly contributions, and maybe it's a $500 a month, maybe it's $5,000 a month, you know, maybe it's $500,000 a month. It, you know, it's all relative compared to the person, but to build that opportunity fund to just get started so that you can pursue the things that you want to pursue is the most important step, is to take the first one.
Yeah, you talked about not saving, right? But paying yourself.
Yeah.
Or budgeting. You know, not really not.
Well, let's just acknowledge that budgeting doesn't work. But if you pay yourself first and then you just spend what's left over, then you'll get all the good results. And just your basic American family, like a normal, not maybe accredited investor or anything, our cash flow control structure can save a couple million dollars. So then all of a sudden you are accredited, right? And now you get to pursue those awesome opportunities. And that couple million takes time. Like, as you said, it's not going to happen overnight, but it's a 30-year view. Well, yeah, most people get serious about their finances in their 30s. So 30 to 60, that's nothing. You got another 30 years after that of 60 to 90. Because we have to realize that age 65, which was put out in our society, in the 1930s, is this thing called retirement. It never got moved forward. Like, we're living decades longer than people used to live in the 30s, but we never changed age 65. So if you do the math, age 65 today should actually be age 87. And I've got my own father who's in his mid-80s. He's still working part-time. My mother-in-law is still working part-time out of her home. But, they're still active and working. And it's because they invested in themselves early on, figured out what they were good at. They love the work that they do. They're way more alive than their fully retired friends who are, often sitting around not doing a whole lot. And holy cow, somebody today in their 30s or 40s, they're going to live well past 100. So we really need to rethink this age 65, and really the whole retirement construct needs to just, in my opinion, be tossed out the window, but at a minimum, rethink.
That's so smart. And we talked about AI and what it's doing in medicine and, life expectancy. It's such a great point. And it's important to get serious about your future and finances, and to do it with a strategy that takes everything into consideration and not really wing it, right? We talked about so much of the American culture. A lot of that is winging it and going off of what feels good. And it's important to have strategy, and so much of the strategy you're talking about is legacy, not only, latter stages of your life, but, generational wealth creation. That's what's ringing in my head as you're talking. So thank you so much for helping me and the audience level up. When it comes to mindset, you say we either grow or we die. For someone scaling their business, what's the single mindset shift that accelerates growth?
Oh, it's gratitude. Without a shadow of a doubt. And holy cow, I mean, it costs us nothing to be grateful. And I get it. You know, I'm in a bad mood sometimes. I'm rushed. I'm, you know, stressed about whatever. And I'm not as gracious and grateful as a person as I should be. But even the simple things like smiling at the custodian of your building or, you know, the guy that's out blowing the leaves or whatever, that's a form of gratitude. Being grateful every time you spend money, right? If you're having a bill paying session or, you know, you're paying your bookkeeper and they're having a bill paying session, being grateful and being proactively grateful, not because you expect anything back, but just because gratitude is what creates growth. And gratitude also will overcome whatever fear you might be feeling or other scarcity thoughts, which again, you know, we all have them. Gratitude will overcome the grumpiness that sometimes we have as human beings. Gratitude will fill the space if there's an awkward human involvement. A smile is a big part of that gratitude, of course, but being gracious, being grateful, being proactively grateful, being grateful before the whatever it is occurs. I put on events and I actually ask the audience to give the speakers a standing ovation when they're introduced. Not at the end of their talk, which they can do that if they want, but when they're introduced, as a way to show gratitude to that speaker before they have come on stage and shared with us their wisdom. So there's lots of fun things that you can do to get proactive gratitude installed in your life. And a big part of it is not complaining. Because, oh my gosh, us Americans, we want to complain about the weather, our clothes, the hair, you know, the food, you name it. And once you become aware of that, you just like lost half of your conversation ability. Well, fine, zip it, right? We have two ears and one mouth anyway. Maybe we should use that ratio a little bit more. And it's not a complaint. And this is from Will Bowen, Complaint Free World, if you are aware of that. He says, it's not a complaint if you talk to the person that can do something about it. So his famous story is, he's at lunch with his mom and his mom says, oh my gosh, the soup is cold. And Will's like, I can't do anything about that. But if you will just call the waiter over, I'm sure they will reheat your soup. So it's not a complaint if you're sharing an issue that somebody can solve. But to just complain because that's what we do is so not helpful. Fill that space with gratitude instead. Find something. Dig out something to be grateful about and then verbalize it. You'll see the difference.
No kidding. So much about life and business is mindset. Okay. And as an entrepreneur looking to scale and continue to grow on this path, it takes time. Yeah. And you know, whether it's your 30s, 40s, 50s, when you're making an investment, becoming a franchise partner, it's not just becoming an owner, right? That's the first part of the journey, setting up the vision, getting a solid plan in place, and then you have to execute. And it takes time. And there are seasons in the business where you're in, you know, setup mode, launch mode, learning mode. You're going from toddler to teenager to adult, if you will. And you know, simple analogy, but it really is true that it is in seasons and phases, and that requires a certain mindset to put things in context and to understand that, hey, you come with a lifetime of experience and skills, and yes, you are talented and have accomplished much in your life and are on the path to do that and then some in a different area, but in this season, you're getting into stride, and that is such a wise statement because it is about mindset and enjoying the journey. As you were talking, I was thinking about how important it is to enjoy the process, and when you can come from a place of gratitude, it really produces that much more abundance. and you attract that much more of what you want, because frankly, that's what is an attractor versus a deterrent. And you talked about abundance versus scarcity. It's great. It's rooted in gratitude.
Agreed. I'm super grateful for my parents just pounding that into my head as a kid. You know, we were allowed to wear our hair however we wanted and pretty much wear whatever clothes we wanted as long as we had a smile on our face.
Yay. I had a friend make a comment at, we had our annual conference, and in fact, it was a colleague here at home office, and she was saying, you know, I was looking at your daughter, she's 5, by the way, and I have 4 kiddos, and this is my youngest one, and she came to the award ceremony night one, and she had a tutu dress and this Christmas sweater and some other stuff on, and she totally dressed herself and just came with a big smile. And you saying that just reminded me of my daughter, it's so pivotal to have the right approach. And as a business owner, people are depending on you, and it's your vision, it's your path, and you're painting that for other folks, and they're jumping on board and hooking their car up to your truck, and they're on for the ride. And, you know, it's your vision and passion that bleeds across the entire organization. And so being rooted in gratitude, my goodness, it is so life-giving. And so you started in financial planning and left it to create something different. With that vantage, what's the most harmful advice you see still being given to business owners today?
Without a doubt, it's to max out your 401k plan, MAX. And a second one is to prepay your mortgage, commercial building, residence, whichever. Those two things have literally obliterated more wealth than anything else I know, minus the investment space where you lose money. So I guess number one should be don't lose principal. Number two, don't max out your 401k. And number three, don't prepay your mortgage.
Hmm. Yeah, it's so common to do those things, right? Especially that 401k, my goodness, just helping out Wall Street versus taking control of your financial future. So exciting. In your work, you help dollars do multiple jobs for clients. In a franchising context, what's a way an owner can make their capital work harder than just reinvesting profits?
Well, it's so tempting to do that. And that is absolutely appropriate for some businesses, especially in the early phases. But as quickly as they can, they're so much better buying more franchises, buying additional real estate, not trying to basically have a race to the bottom, but instead to continue to build. And so as they pursue those parallel paths, right? So your accumulation, your growth path gets bigger and bigger, make your protection path bigger and bigger right along with it, and just keep leveling up, you know, I would use that word whether I was talking to you or not, keep leveling up the areas of the businesses that are working for you, but cross-collateralize them. And that's what I mean by getting your dollars to do lots of jobs. In other words, money in a retirement plan does one job. Money in a franchise, it is 3 or 4 jobs. You get some tax deduction, you get to hire some people, you get to use your own skills the best way possible, et cetera. But then if you spend the profit of that first franchise off, again, you know, you got to reinvest sometimes to get it going, but if you can spin the profit off and then you maybe buy the real estate that's underneath the franchise, or you buy another franchise or an even different franchise or another real estate investment, et cetera, and then you spend some of that profit off and you increase your protection, now you're building two very, very solid parallel paths that, you know, just like two arms of steel are going to be better together, you've got a situation in your personal finances where you're even stronger.
Wow, no kidding. And you wrap that into the rest of the conversation. That's a powerful strategy. Is there anything that should be done from an entity setup to help with everything?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think the absolute default minimum is an LLC. And then depending on where you are, profitability, it's absolutely appropriate to layer a C corporation over that and build up from that standpoint. And then, of course, you know, earlier I was talking about protection and I neglected to mention that you want your wills and trusts current too. And so that's another layer. You know, we don't think about that as an entity, but it essentially is. And certainly trusts can be separate entities, like that charitable remainder trust I spoke of earlier. You know, that's not going to be your first trust. You're going to have a revocable living trust as your first trust, which is technically not a separate entity. But a charitable remainder trust has its own tax ID number and is a separate entity. And you're going to combine that with some LLCs, as stated, and then, you know, maybe some family donor spaces, you know, depending on how you want to pick your charity, et cetera.
Yeah, how exciting. And what's the address to your website again?
It's prosperitythinkers.com. And for your community, I actually have a special gift. So I'm sure you'll have this in the show notes at prosperitythinkers.com/special/level-up. We have a dedicated document there that talks a little bit about what I was saying about the importance of saving first and how with a structure you can make that happen and gain a $2 million difference over your lifetime. I've got that proven out in the white paper that you'll find at prosperitythinkers.com/special/level-up. So thank you for putting that in the show notes for everybody.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. You took the words right off the tip of my tongue there. Yeah, the entity structure, the wills, and trust, it's all part of the overall strategy in creating success in the path that you're creating. So looking 5 years ahead, where do you believe the greatest opportunity lies for business owners who want to lead in the new era of capital strategy?
I really think it's keeping your dollars in your control, in a space where you can pivot and take advantage of opportunities. The more you build up that liquidity, the bigger opportunities you're going to find. And, you know, people, we want something for nothing. We want results today. It's very hard to do that 30 to 40% of your overall environment in liquid dollars. But if you store them in a place that's efficient, like we talked about with the whole life insurance, then I promise you opportunity will seek you out and you'll find those incredible deals. You know, Dolph DeRoos, he's a Kiyosaki real estate guy. He says the deal of the decade comes along once a week. Well, it doesn't come along if you don't have the cash to take advantage of it. And so having that cash and liquidity is so important for anybody, really. You know, it's all dependent on the level of the game. But when you're a franchise owner, you have real estate, that liquidity is just an opportunity fund for the next deal.
No kidding. Well said. So final question for you, Kim. Why do you love franchising so much?
License to print money and ability to create value first.
Wow, that's amazing. Most folks are at that crossroads and really don't know where to turn. Clearly, Kim Butler isn't just showing you franchise opportunities that fit your skills and experience and lifestyle. That's critical. but she's giving you the strategy and the path to make it happen. Kim Butler with Prosperity Thinkers, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Nick. It was a joy.
Absolutely. And again, where can folks reach out if they want to learn more?
Prosperitythinkers.com. And then I'm on all the social platforms as well, Kim Butler, and all my books on Amazon. I have my own The Prosperity Podcast that's on Apple's and, all the other places that you get podcasts on like your own. And it's a joy to do that as well. I love the space.
No kidding. What's your favorite book on Amazon that you published?
Of the 11 that I have, and I am working on 12th, which I'm really excited about. It's going to be called Yay. Prosperity Parents.
All right.
But the ones that are out there, really busting the financial planning lies, was technically the second book that I put out, and I've updated it recently. And holy cow, as I was going, thank you so much for asking, because as I was going through it, I thought, gosh, this is a really good book. But we tweaked it, made it even better. And that's the one that I would point people to. And it's on Audibles as well as Kindle, as well as, of course, a soft copy on Amazon.
All right. Yeah, that book, it will give context to so many of our conversation points today.
Yes.
So what a great recommendation there. You heard it here from Kim. I certainly leveled up on our conversation today. You know what to do. Hit the subscribe button. Drop a comment down below. We would love to hear your thoughts. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.